Right, so I am Mohammed Chalabi, and I'm a graduate student here at Brimeter Institute at the University of Waterloo. So today I'm going to show you some beam plasma simulations in the nonlinear regime, and this work was done with collaboration with our laser heating group. So in the talk, I'm going to discuss first the numerical tool we're going to use, just briefly. And then I'm going to show some numerical simulation where the background is homogeneous or uniform background. And then we're going to look at the case where we add some inhomogeneity in the number density of the and spatial distribution in the number density of the background and see how this affects the evolution of the beam in the linear regime. So, to start off, this is the equation that everybody saw maybe more than once. This is the collisionless. This is the equation to make any prediction for collisionless plasma. This is just evolution equation for the distribution function in the phase space. And this is Maxwell's equation. Just you calculate the moments, solve for the fields, loop back, and you determine the evolution of the distribution function. For the problem that we're looking at, for these are typical numbers, we have a very diluted beam traveling with a very high relativistic gamma factor, 10 to the 6 to the 10 to the 7, and a density contrast, this is the number density of the beam to the number density of the IgM, is 10 to the minus 5 to 10 to the minus 7, 10 to the minus 15 to 10 to the minus 17. So we have two very different scales, and to see that, if you just try to look at the ratio between the energy in the beam to the inertial energy of the background, there's a 9 order of magnitude difference. And if you look at the linear reactive regime, this is for the electrostatic modes. The time scale in the background is the plasma frequency. The growth time scale, this is the rate by which the beam would lose energy, is 10 to the 10 order of magnitude lower. So we have a very different two scales. So to make a simulation for that, we need a numerical tool that we can run for very long time, and we can still trust what we see from the simulations. So the usual way of doing plasma simulation is using particle and cell simulation. And the idea there is you have computational particles, and you do particle deposition on the grid. You calculate the moments, the current and the charge density, and then you solve Maxwell's equations on the grid. You find fields, and then you use these fields and do back interpolation. You find forces on the particle, and then you use a busher to bush the particles, and you repeat. The idea is simple. We implemented a one-dimensional version for this scheme, and for the version we implemented, we had the Boucher is second-order symplectic, though we're implementing higher-order symplectic right now. The Maxwell's equation solver is up to six-order accurate. For the deposition step and the back interpolation step, we use higher-order interpolations. So we use from first order to fifth order. And the intuitive picture for higher order interpolation is you assume that your computational particle, that's going to be a model for your physical particle, is to assume that these computational particle has a higher spatial extent. So why did we go for a way to see why we needed the higher order interpolation is to look at the numerical heating. This is like a well-known problem called grid heating. So if you have a spatially uniform plasma distributed uniformly on the grid, and you start with temperature 10 to the minus 4, and you watch how the temperature and the energy, the error in the energy, the total energy of the system evolve. So the total energy should, the error in the energy should be zero, but you doing numerics, so you have some error. But if you use higher order interpolation, we see that our ability to make the plasma stay at the temperature, doesn't heat up as what we expect, gets better and better when you use higher order interpolation. And this gives also us a better handle on the energy conservation. So we get lower and lower error in the energy. So now we have a higher order interpolation, we can do look deeper and deeper in the nonlinear regime because we have better energy conservation. So when you run a simulation, there are three resolution aspects that you need to be careful with. The first one is spatial resolution. Everybody knows that. The second one is momentum resolution. So when you do the interpolation step, you're trying to resolve your momentum or phase-based distribution function to calculate the currents on the cell. So if you have more and more computational particle, you have these distributions, or your computational particle is going to be better and better representatives for your physical distribution, or for the underlying distribution function for your physical particles. So you get less and less noise. The last one, the last resolution, which is very important and people usually overlook it, is the spectral resolution. So the spectral resolution, if you imagine that you have a mood, this is the mood or the wavelength that you're interested in, and you want to look at the growth rate for nearby wavelength. If you have a bigger and bigger box, you can observe the growth rate for smaller and smaller difference in the wavelengths. So you get better and better spectral resolution as you increase your box size. So why that's important for the beam plasma instability problem is because if you look at the dispersion relation for alpha 10 to the minus 3, gamma of 100. If you look at the growth rate as a function for the wave mode in terms of the scan depth, it has this peak feature. So if you want to resolve using your periodic box, your simulations, you want to resolve these unstable modes, you have to have a good spectral resolution in the K-space. This is why it was important, and we're going to see how this is going to affect your results even in the linear regime. So if you have a periodic box with this size, and the reason why I'm showing this size is because this is the typical size for people who try to tackle this problem. So if you have 125 skin depth box, periodic box, along these lines are the wave moves that are allowed to grow in your simulation. And if your simulation is perfect, these are the growth rate that you can observe in your simulation. So you can, for instance, for this box size, you can observe the most unstable mode. But if you increase your spectral resolution, have a bigger box while fixing your other resolution parameters, you allow more and more moves to grow in the unstable region. So you have better, you capture more, better and better the instability. So now we have a numerical tool as we know how to improve its energy conservation. We can look at the case of the homogeneous background and we can see how we can use this. So this is a simulation from Lorenzo and Cironi. He was trying to compare between 1D and 2D. So here we're gonna just focus about the 1D. 1D results, so this is the black curve. So in 1D, we have just electrostatic instabilities. So as Brett was saying, you have the oblique instability, it commits a suicide. And then you have the Weibull instability, commits a suicide. And then you have the electrostatic modes or longitudinal modes, and they commit a suicide, and then you go to the nonlinear regime. So for the 1D, we have just one chance. We have just the electrostatic modes. They commit a suicide, you're in the nonlinear regime. So this is the simulation reported by Cironi and Ingenius in 2013, and the black curve is the 1D energy evolution for the beam. So you see around maybe like 15% of the beam lost in the linear regime, and then you go to the nonlinear regime. And his time scale, so the time scale for the growth here is like 10 to the 4, and his nonlinear regime was 10 to the 5. So he just simulated like an order of magnitude and used this result to make statements about the nonlinear regime. So if we do a similar simulation using the code we wrote and using first order interpolations, and we look at the energy error, it's around 1%, and this is consistent with what Lorenzo and company reported in their simulations. So you get the same energy evolution for the beam, and the energy error is around 1% of the initial beam energy. But now we can implement higher order interpolation. And if we do that, if we run our simulation using fifth order interpolation, we get similar beam evolution in the linear regime, but the error in the energy is two order of magnitude better. So the error is 10 to the minus 4 of the initial beam energy. And another important feature is, like, if you look at the first order interpolation, you have this circular feature in the error in the energy. It keeps growing. But if you look at the fifth order, you have a smaller error when the linear instability kicks in, but you have a better and better control as you go deeper and deeper in the nonlinear regime. So if we do that, so this is the same time scale as Lorenzo, and we will use that time scale to say that, oh, you have in the nonlinear regime saturation. This is what people thought is the saturation. But if you have a better energy conservation, you can run for longer time. So the green region is the 10 to the 5 time scale, and we run it 70 times longer. And you see the energy of the beam keeps increasing while we have a good control over the energy conservation. And maybe in the log scale, it doesn't look very impressive, but if you look at the linear scale, it looks more impressive. So you see in the linear regime, you lose around 15% of your energy for that particular periodic box, and then the energy of the beam keeps being dumped in the background. So this is around 70%, and this is like when we run like 700 longer than the inverse of the growth rate. So this is very close to the factor of 100 that Reinhardt was talking about this morning. And if you look at the momentum distribution, yeah, you see a plateau feature in the momentum distribution for these things around 50%, but the high energy particle start losing also energy. So you have a distribution that looks like the plateau, like this, but then this tail keeps doing that, going toward the background. And this is why you see more and more energy being lost from the beam to the background on a relatively longer time scale than the linear regime, but it's still shorter than the inverse quantum cascade. So this is the first part. The second part I want to talk about is when you have the background has some inhomogeneity. And this was like an issue that was raised by Minetti and Aliyev and some other people. So if you have the beams traveling through background that has some inhomogeneity in the background, and you see that the linear dispersion relation has spike feature, so you might worry that when you travel through the inhomogeneity, the skin depth is going to change and you may fall off resonance. So this is gonna kill your linear growth. And to quantify this, Minetti and Aliyev said that, okay, so the time scale for the growth has to be less than the time scale for going off resonance. And this delta K parallel is the width of your instability. So for the electrostatic modes, we have this combination of parameters that has to be less than one. But we can test this using simulation and see if the waves grow or not. So this is the simulation that we ran. And here is, on the left, we have the number density of the background. So this is the number density of the electron positron background. And on top of them, uniformly distributed beams traveling with a gamma of almost 100. The density contrast is 10 to the minus 3. But so the condition for this waves to not go off resonance is now violated by 7 order of magnitude. I'm gonna see what happens. And for reference, and on the right plot, I'm gonna keep track of how the fractional beam energy loss. And for reference, this is for the uniform case. This is the blue curve. For the uniform case, I'm gonna see this evolution. So I'm gonna lose 1 minute here when I show the movie. So see the waves are clearly growing here in the low density regions. And then everywhere the waves are growing. And the beam is losing energy and it's losing even more energy than the corresponding uniform case. So this is a snapshot at the end of the movie. So you see that three things, the waves we saw during the movie grew everywhere. And we saw, if you look at the slope of the in the linear regime, it's a bit slower. So for this particular case, it was slower by a factor of four. But the energy lost by the beam is higher. So let's try to understand why this happened. So if you look for the uniform case, and you look at this particular box, along these black lines are the wave moves that you allow to grow in the simulations. So these are the growth rates that you have in your simulation if your background is uniform. But when you have inhomogeneity, so if you imagine that the waves are growing here, you don't impose any periodic boundary conditions. So in that sense, most of these modes are allowed to grow in these regions, up to some cutoff, lower cutoff here. But so you're kind of opening more and more modes. So you, and this is why you see more energy loss than the uniform case. Why it was slower? If we imagine we have a wave maximally growing, this wave is growing in the low density region and tries to climb upward in the density. What happens is when you increase the number density, the plasma frequency decreases. So you move downward in this curve. So you go from this growth rate to a slower growth rate. This is why you see the slope is slower than the uniform case. But you open more and more modes, so you have more modes for the beam to exchange more energy. So I don't want people to misunderstand me and think that the inhomogeneity will improve the energy loss. Actually, it improved the energy loss because our spectral resolution for the same box was bad. And this is the typical number that people use in their simulations. You don't even resolve your linear regime very well. So if you double the spectral resolution while maintaining the same spatial resolution and the same momentum resolution, number of particles per cell, you get a curve that looks like the inhomogeneity case. And if you triple, it's still the same level. It exits from the nonlinear, from the linear regime to the nonlinear regime around the same energy level, which is 25%. So to summarize, we saw that uncontrolled numeric can like hinder our ability to look deeper and deeper in the linear regime. And we saw at least for 1D how we overcome this grid heating. More and more problems happens when you go to nonlinear, to higher dimension. And I think Jean-Luc is going to be talking about these numerical instabilities and how we can solve them in higher dimension. But at least in one dimension, when we have this just the electrostatic case, when we simulated the uniform background, the beam lost almost all its energy on a time scale that was 70 times more than the 700 more than the linear, the time scale for the linear regime. And when we added a background inhomogeneity, it didn't affect, it didn't kill the instability in the linear regime. It just lowered the growth rate in the linear regime, and the beam still going from the linear regime to the nonlinear regime around the same level. And that's it. Thank you.
I think we have time for a couple questions, and Stefan, I'll get you to start to say what would you say?
Yeah, Mohamed. In the uniform case, when you when the beam keeps losing energy in the nonlinear regime, here, what is the mechanism of energy transfer once the linear regime is over?
So I don't know exactly what the mechanism, but we observe this in the simulations. If you look at the momentum distribution, you have this tail of energy after you go to the plateau distribution is going closer to the background. So I don't know what's exactly the mechanism of the nonlinear regime. You have so many moves are open, and you have coupling between all the different k's. So it's kind of hard to understand what happens in the nonlinear regime.
Yeah, so I think it's very nice that you're seeing that the grid heating, of course, needs to be taken into account, and this is non-problematic simulations. But I think it's also very important to look at other numerical effects in this, even in 1D simulation, but what I was just discussing with you before. It has to do with the inner stopping of relativistic particles in the background plasma. what happens is that if you consider a relativistic electron moving in a vacuum plasma, you will see that this electron is going to drive a wave. So it's going to lose energy to drive the prostatic wave behind it. Now, when you use when you do a particle cell simulation, typically we use macro particles, meaning that one simulation particle is actually not corresponding to one real electron, but typically, let's say, to 100 or 1,000 electrons. And so in that case, what you have is 1,000 electrons moving covalently, and they lose a lot more energy than 1,000 incovalent electrons would lose. And so I'm just a bit concerned about that. I think it's something that should be checked, because if you plug in the numbers for these conditions, you would expect something like at 10 to the 6 omega t inverse, you would lose 10% of your beam energy.
So, so the beam here lost more than 70%.
I know, but I'm saying...
But you, as we were discussing earlier...
This is 7 times 10 to the 6, so it would be exactly what you expect from theory. So I'm not saying that it's the case, but I'm saying that it's something that one needs to be very careful about. We've seen this before in many simulations. And so also the fact that this is, seems to be quite linear, to me, hints at this type of processes. So I think one needs to be careful about that. Also because I would expect, as Leonard mentioned yesterday, that just from the typical instabilities, you would not expect the beam to lose more than 50% of its energy. So I'm not saying it's relevant here, but I think it's something that one needs to be careful in checking, because certainly we have seen this in many relativistic shocks and non-relativistic shock problems where we are also interested in modeling very long time scales. And so this is a problem that starts hitting us when we look at very long.
So where does, so according to your mechanics, where does the 10% of the energy go? Does it go
to the background? Process. It's just an energy exchange between the non-thermal and thermal population. So you're just dumping your energy to heating the background. So you can dump 100% and just end up with a hotter background.
It's really just forced coherence in your fast particle.
Exactly.
But let me ask two questions about that. First is, how would you test whether or not numerically, what experiment would you run to see if that was happening? And second, Muhammad has spent an inordinate amount of time quantitatively reproducing things like the linear beam instability and the standard two-stream instability and
no damping,
all of which he gets to tiny fractions of a percent, correct now. So that doesn't leave a whole lot of room, although I do your point that, well, those are going to happen over some time scale and this can happen over longer time scales, or I'm not quite sure that it might start eating into that. You may very well should have already seen what you're describing in some cases, because looking how far down on the land of Antian tail, the damping rates get very long, and those quantitative don't reproduce exceedingly well. But that said, what's the experiment? Would it be enough just to change the weight function order?
Yeah, so
see how things change.
One simple example would be, you use 10 times more particles per cell, and you see if the, or 10 times less particles per cell, and you see if the result is the same or not for the same time scales. A similar example that we typically do a lot of tests is just do a single particle simulation where you have a background, and you can do it in a periodic box, and you send one relativistic electron with your gamma of 100, let's say, propagate it for a million omega t inverse and see what's the final energy of this electron for different weights. One thing that is important to notice is that this is a physical effect. I mean, this weight excitation.